cold fear. The fear of the murderer disposing of the body, which would give deadly evidence against...
I laid the carpet in the backyard and threw about 20 or 30 buckets of water on it to try to wash the blood off. And the colour of the water that came off was like blood.
Next thing I remember was something scratching and pulling at my mouth. I opened my eyes, and Jean was lying there under me, and I had my hands around her throat.
Murder Most Foul. Six classic murder investigations presented by Nick Ross. Case 5. Sheer Plod.
A poet once wrote of the beauty created by the ploughman's toil. The sheer plod, he called it. Sheer plod is what a great deal of detective work is all about. We travel back to 1943, to wartime, to November fog, and to the town of Luton. Half the size it is today, but still, even then, an important industrial centre, especially in the war, and dominated by the Vauxhall Motor Works. Beside the factory ran the slow, cold waters of the River Lee.
Here we are, just along
Thank
here.
You, Chief Constable.
Sir, this is Detective Inspector Finch, who's been looking after the case, the gentleman from Scotland Yard, Chief Inspector Chapman.
How do you do? I'll just get the scene of crime officer to log you in. Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
My assistant, Detective Sergeant Judge, and Dr. Simpson, the pathologist.
Morning.
Dr. Keith Simpson, I know your name, of course, sir. We tried hard to avoid contamination of the area. This way, if you'll follow the tape.
Have you found anything yet?
Some tire marks. We've taken plastic casts. The body was found at 2:15 yesterday by a couple of sewerage workers. They were certainly it wasn't there at 4 p.m. the day before when they were last at the site.
Could it have drifted downstream?
Oh, I doubt it, sir. The River Lee isn't exactly a raging torrent, is it?
Where's the body?
We had it removed to the mortuary, sir.
I see.
We had it pretty comprehensively photographed, sir. And our own pathologist examined it in situ. He says that death was definitely due to a gunshot wound in the head.
Yes, I saw the teletape.
She was completely naked?
Yes, even the false teeth are missing. Of course, I've got officers going over the whole area, and we're checking the empty houses and bombsite allotments for any sign of her clothes, but...
We'll probably have to draft some more men in.
Well, I've got men asking around at the cafes and ARP posts, checking on the known molesters of women. Then there were the potato sacks the body was wrapped in. One was just Ministry of Food, but we've traced the other to a dealer in Gravenhurst.
Have you? Great work. Well done.
No, but he seems to have distributed hundreds of the things. It's a big job. The string she was tied up with was, just string.
Still, she shouldn't be too difficult to trace.
You'll have our fullest cooperation, of course, Mr. Chapman.
Nowadays, the murder would probably be dealt with locally. But in those times, they would, as they put it, call in the yard. And though the great detectives of the Metropolitan Police held only the rank of chief inspector, they had the status of folk heroes. Indeed, Chapman was one of the big five. He was known as the Cherub for his, well, cherubic looks. And Keith Simpson, the pathologist, was equally well known, a worthy successor to the celebrated Bernard Spilsbury. Simpson lost no time in getting on with his post-mortem, dictating all the time to a secretary seated in a corner of the mortuary who took things down in shorthand.
So, my friend, if this is a gunshot wound, how come there are no bullets? We'd better have the head x-rayed all the same. And the jaw. Should help us with the dentist. Yes, there's bruising on the legs where they were tied up with string. The heart was still pumping blood. She was alive. Though the attacker probably didn't realize it. No bruising where he tied up the trunk, though. Looks like she died while being trussed up. Yes. Strangulation marks on the neck. Any schoolboy should have spotted them. Oh, don't take that down. Gunshot. No, old boy, this is a strangling and bashing murder. Better not take that down either. Strong grip on the neck. No voice box fractures. And no material asphyxial changes. Wasn't the strangling that killed you, was it?
The body in the morgue was made presentable and photographed to show her as she may have looked in life. The x-ray picture of the jaw was published in the British Dental Journal. but police were also detailed to visit all the local dentists and take the x-ray with them, together with full face and profile photographs of the dead woman. Chapman set up his incident room at Luton Police Headquarters, and there he gathered for a briefing the officers assigned to him.
So, to sum up, gentlemen, during the attempted strangulation, she clearly fought back. There are bruises on her elbows and her hands. But the grip on her neck did not contribute to the cause of death. This was clearly a single, very violent blow that crushed the left side of her face, fractured her jaw, loosened her skull bones, and bruised her brain. Not a gunshot wound, I repeat. But certainly leaving her head in a ghastly state.
I very much doubt whether her own mother would have recognized her. Though I must congratulate the police photographer on his excellent work in producing a lifelike picture. Especially the right profile, which we'll be circulating. Any other questions to Dr. Simpson?
I'm afraid I didn't catch the blood group, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry to say, the most common.
And we've no record of her fingerprints at Scotland Yard. Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Simpson.
Thank you.
So, where does that leave us? I gather the tyre marks were a dead end.
I'm afraid so. They turned out to be the local milk van.
Although we now know this wasn't shot, I'd rather not reveal that just at present. There'll be the usual bunch of lunatics making false confessions. They'll have read in the paper that she was shot, so anyone claiming they shot her will know they're lying.
I'm afraid it's too late for that. I announced it at the post-mortem earlier.
Bill, Sergeant Judge will put you in the picture about the sack the body was found in. Potato sacks from Mr. Redmond.
Yes, sir. Frank Redmond's been very cooperative, but he doesn't seem to keep very careful records. We have one lead, though. A local shopkeeper remembers one man who came in and bought four sacks, empty sacks, and the date more or less tallies. It could be nothing, but we'll have to try and trace him. I'll give those officers assigned to this the details later.
So, we need to find out A, who she was, B, where her clothing went, and C, if anyone saw anything suspicious near the Osborne Bridge where she was found. Even with the fog and the blackout, someone must have seen something, a vehicle perhaps, or a handcart, even a wheelbarrow with a strange load. Sergeant Judge?
The obvious people to talk to are the lorry drivers going to and from Vauxhall. They go right by the spot where she was found. You'll be given a questionnaire, the usual sort of thing. Were you in the area? Did you see anything unusual? Can you account for your movements? But use your initiative as well. As for who she is, well, some of you will have to check out the local ATS and other female service personnel. Now, obviously, we'll put announcements in the press, and we'll need to check with other divisions regarding women reported missing. She could have been brought in some distance by one of the lorry drivers.
But isn't it likely she's a local woman, sir?
Yes, it is. And that's where your local knowledge comes in. Inspector Finch?
Oh, thank you, Chief Inspector. We have a slightly different questionnaire for this, but it'll be the good old house-to-house, knocking on doors. Every house in Luton, it need be. Don't push them too hard. As soon as they see the photo, they'll know what you're on about. It's been in all the papers. One thing, though, lads, hold back. You'll find out more by listening than by firing questions at them. And don't forget the neighbours. They'll be the ones who'll know if anything's been going on.
Now, despite all our efforts, there's still no sign of the clothing in the immediate area. Of course, it could have been burned. But you'll have to search the records of all the local cleaners for any unclaimed stuff, or, if your luck's in, still with bloodstains on it.
Sir?
Mr. Finch?
We have a central yard here for all unwanted clothing and stuff brought in by the dustbin men. The Luton Salvage Centre. We set it up during the Blitz. I've got a couple of our chaps sifting through everything that's come in the last few days. there's a lot of it, though.
Good, excellent. I'll try and find some more men for you. It's going to be a long haul, but if you could identify an item of clothing with a corpse, it'd be a pretty good start. Meanwhile, we'll see what we can do with the photographs. All of you on the house-to-house and at Vauxhall's with copies. The local paper already have them, and we'll get them out to the local newsagents. We've also decided on something a little unusual.
ladies and gentlemen, stop the music, will you, Harry? Harry! Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, before our main feature, which is, of course, James Cagney and Mae Clark in Pluck of the Irish, the management of the Union Cinema have been asked by the police, by Scotland Yard, to display a photograph, a slide of the unfortunate young lady whose body was found in the River Lee 6 days ago. Now, I'm sure you've all read about it. Lights down, please, Harry. Right. Phil, if you just... put the slide on.
The slide was accompanied by an appeal for information. It was the first time this idea had been used in Britain, and it nearly worked. In fact, there were people in the cinema in Luton who would have known the victim, and some were even related to her. But the face had been so battered that for all the skills of DC Upchurch, the police photographer, she really wasn't recognisable. Meanwhile, the public were bringing in clothing, reporting screams they'd heard, and generally doing their best to assist with the inquiry. At one point, the detectives thought they'd found the dead woman's shoes, and 200 shoe repairers were visited, all to no avail. The cinema slides were eventually withdrawn from Luton and shown in the nearby towns of Bedford, Dunstable, Hitchin and Harpenden. More and more photographs of the corpse were taken, with the hair done differently or the face made chubbier with cotton wool. The CID officers were working 12 or 18 hours a day. They were bombarded with phone calls from husbands and from parents of missing women. And in the course of the inquiry, 404 missing females were either traced or excluded. The police checked 681 addresses of women obtained through post-restant or undelivered letters, and 39 identity visits were paid to the body in the morgue.
This is the one here. Are you ready?
No. No, that's not her.
No, Sergeant. That's not our daughter.
Sorry. I'm very sorry.
Meanwhile, of course, there was the routine work, interviewing 250 lorry drivers, sorting through huge heaps of filthy clothing, and knocking on every house door in Luton.
Hello? What is it? Who is it?
Police, madam. Do you recognise this photograph?
Oh, Harry, yes.
You recognise her?
Yes, from the newspapers.
But not personally?
Oh, no. No, of course not. I've never actually seen her.
One tweed skirt stained, one black felt hat.
One brown imitation velour coat with grey artificial silk lining. Military collar? Yeah, this has got a cleaner's tag.
Yeah, better send it up to the governor. Might be something.
Let's see. No. No. That's not her. No.
I repeat, Constable, my wife has left me. Yes, left me. Good day.
Yeah, she left him, all right. Yes, that's right, Constable. Went off with a bombardier.
She isn't dead, do you think?
Dead? Not likely. She's come alive after that one, living the life of Riley. Would you like a cup of tea?
Good heavens, what a dreadful... Oh, dear, oh, dear. Poor creature. But not my sister, for certainly not. No, that's not her.
Another one down, Chief. Alive and well and living on the Isle of Wight.
The 18th, you say? Well, I was here on the 18th of last month, yeah. Let's have a look at that picture again. No, I can't say I saw anything funny. Mind you, it was one egg of a pea super, if I recall, wasn't it? Real pea super.
Shut up, you lot. No, I can't say I do recognise her. Excuse me a sec, the kids.
Come off it. In next door? Nah, saint he is. The way he worships those kids. She's left him before, of course. She'll be back. Same as last time.
Hang on. Here, these suede shoes, man.
Nah, don't talk to me about shoes. Not after last time.
Nah, nothing here. Nah, no good.
I don't know. Sorry, no. I never...
Certain. No, definitely not. Quite certain.
Let's have a look. No, none of these. Not one. No, they don't fit the bill.
Last month. The 18th? I was in Bristol. No. No, sorry, mate.
The body's over here, sir.
Over here?
Yeah, that's it, sir. This one here.
Yes. Yes, that's my wife. sorry, I'm afraid.
But it wasn't. 9 people positively identified the body as 4 different women, but all of them were mistaken. Eventually, the corpse deteriorated too much to be easily identifiable by anyone, and at last the unknown woman was laid to rest in a pauper's grave. The service was conducted by the curate at Luton Parish Church, one Dr. Stock, a German refugee from Nazi persecution. There were no mourners. The inquiry continued, and weeks turned into months. Hundreds of police officers were involved, and the search extended throughout the nation, even spreading to neutral Ireland. In February, 2.5 months after the body had been discovered, listeners to the BBC heard just after the 6 o'clock news.
We have been asked by the Metropolitan Police to broadcast this message. On November the 19th last year, the body of an unknown woman was found in the River Lee near Osborne Bridge, Luton. It seems probable she did not live in or near Luton, but was brought in a vehicle. The body was wrapped in sacks.
But whatever the theories about where the unknown woman came from, in Luton, the work of checking everything continued, including checking out every item of clothing that had any means of identification. The local dry cleaners, like Sketchley's, must have got quite used to visits from the police.
Hello, Mr. Lawson. Here we are again, eh?
Yep, here we are again.
Well, what have you got for me this time?
Another one from the salvage centre. It's got a tab on it. V12247. Well, that's one of yours, isn't it?
2247. Yes, it's ours. Ah, here we are. A coat brought in to be dyed black 4 months ago. This is Irene Manton, 14 Regent Street.
Mrs. Irene Manton, 14 Regent Street. I suppose we've got a questionnaire on her.
That's bound to.
You've got one on everyone in Luton, including the mayor.
Yeah, I've got it here, sir. Oh, it's interesting.
Ah, she's left him, yes, last seat. Why didn't we follow this up at the time, Lawson?
Well, I've got the report from their neighbours here, sir. Seems a harmless enough fella. And she left him before. Would you like me to go over and see him?
No. No, Constable. Do you know, I think I'll go over myself.
There's an old story that the police resolved the case by chance, that Chapman spotted a mongrel dog with a cloth in its mouth, and that the dog turned out to belong to the Mantons. But the people who were involved at the time, people like Keith Simpson and Rex Upchurch, are adamant that's nonsense. It was painstaking police work, the sifting of the old clothes that eventually turned up the vital clue. And when they had the clue, when the door to 14 Regent Street was opened by a 10-year-old girl, Chapman was immediately struck by her resemblance to the murdered woman.
Hello, my name's Chief Inspector Chapman.
My name's Sheila.
Is your mother at home?
No, she's gone away. Is anything wrong?
I'm just making some inquiries. Where's she gone?
First she went to Grandma Bavister's, then she went to my uncle in Grantham.
Oh, where does Grandma Bavister live?
At Church Street.
Where's that, Sheila?
Here in Luton, of course.
Oh, of course. And where's your father?
At work, at the fire brigade. He's on duty.
Yes. Have you got a picture of your mother?
Yes. I'll go and get it.
Chapman then visited Irene Manton's mother, Mrs. Bavister. She denied her daughter had stayed with her recently and insisted she was up in Hampstead. Indeed, she then produced 4 letters she'd received from Irene. Mrs. Bavister was exceedingly short-sighted, almost blind, in fact, and could hardly read the letters. Chapman persuaded her to lend them to him, and on examination he noticed they were poorly spelled. Hampstead, for example, was simply H-A-M-S-T-E-A-D, without the P. Detective Inspector Finch visited Manton, and during a wide-ranging conversation, casually questioned him about his dentist. It turned out to be a Mr. Battle. Now, Mr. Battle, just like every other dentist, had been visited, of course, but he'd been busy and preoccupied. Now, though, he recognised Irene Manton's photograph, and his record cards revealed the 3 residual roots shown on the X-ray of the victim's jaw. The plaster cast of the jaw fitted exactly. Now, after 3 months, everything suddenly came together in 48 hours. Frank Redmond checked his records. He found he'd sold Manton several sacks of potatoes, and the sacks hadn't been returned. Then it turned out that the dates of the Hampstead letters corresponded exactly with the periods of Manton's leave from the fire service. He was pulled in on February the 22nd, 1944, and Chief Inspector Chapman met him for the first time. It was 11:45 at night.
Mr. Manton, as you probably know, we're investigating the murder of an unknown woman whose unclothed body was found in the River Lee on Friday, November the 19th last year.
Yes.
I understand your wife has left you.
Yeah, not for the first time.
What date did she go?
25th November.
And where can she be found?
Oh, I don't know. We had a quarrel and she slung her hook. If she's not with her mother, she'd be at her brother at Grantham. She's very fond of him.
What about Hampstead? Didn't her mother get letters from Hampstead?
Yeah, you're right, she did.
Look, just to remind me, would you note down those three possibilities on the back of this envelope? Her mother's, Grantham and Hampstead.
What? Oh, yeah. All right.
You married in 1926?
Yes.
And you've got four children?
Yeah. Our Ivy, she's 17. Proper little madam. Ronald's 15, Roy's 14, and Sheila's 10.
Do you recognise these photographs?
That's Rini. Where'd you get it from?
From Sheila. This photograph?
Well, it's the picture of the dead woman in the papers. I don't know who she is.
What went wrong?
What?
With your marriage.
Well, in 1942, she took this job, went out to work like, and, you know, she got into bad company.
How do you mean?
She drank more than usual, smoked a lot, went out dancing, stayed out late.
Oh, did you talk to her about it?
She told me to mind my own business. We ended up quarrelling and I told her to clear out. She left me in November, it was, 42. Stayed away till March, 43.
Where did she stay?
With her mother, Mrs. Babister. I eventually got her to come back. I knew she was associated with soldiers and, well, I had it in my mind she might have been disloyal to me, but I had no proof of her being immoral. We lived together, but it wasn't the same. We weren't very happy.
You quarrelled?
Yeah, a lot. But I never struck her. Things got worse. Yeah, I admit it. I often brought up her, well, you know, previous bad behaviour. For some time past, I've worked in a plume and feathers in my spare time as a potman. My wife took exception to this. Things come to a head. There was a quarrel. She flung some tea. I didn't hit her mind. But she left me. Walked out.
This was on the 25th of November?
That's right. Look, I remember the body of the dead woman being found in the lane. And I've seen photographs in the shop windows and that. And, well, I'm quite sure this photo here isn't my wife. I mean, she was alive when the body was found. Well, when she heard about it, she was still with me. Look, she said to me, she said, some poor bitch has caught it.
But what about those letters spelling Hampstead without a P? Chapman asked Manton to do some writing for him and dictated to him the letters sent to Irene's mother. The handwriting looked very similar indeed. Manton's house was searched. A few bloodstains, group O, were found on a skirting board, but sometime recently everything had been wiped suspiciously clean. Irene had lived there, but her fingerprints were nowhere to be found. Then, forgotten at the back of a cupboard, they came across an empty pickle jar, covered in dust, and on it the clear impression of a left thumbprint. It was compared with a thumbprint from the corpse, and the prints were found to match. They had the 16 points of correspondence required by law. Chief Inspector Chapman and Bertie Manton met again.
You are Bertie Horace William Manton of 14 Regent Street, Luton.
Yes, I am.
You are not obliged to say anything, but I must warn you that anything you do say will be taken down and may be used in evidence against you. I am informed that you were on leave on November the 18th. I am convinced that it was on that date and not on November the 25th when your wife was last seen. I am now satisfied that the body found in the river was that of your wife, and you will therefore be arrested and charged with murdering her.
I don't care for myself, Mr. Chapman. I know I'm done. I've tried to protect my children. Will you please do the best you can for them? I'm sorry I told you lies about my wife, but I love my children, and I've only tried to protect them and their future. Look, I've always worked hard, been an honest man. I don't deserve the trouble my wife has brought on me. I killed her. But it was only because I lost my temper. I didn't mean to.
In his statement, Bertie Manton told how, in temper, he'd hit his wife with a heavy wooden stool. He'd carried the body to the cellar and washed the blood up before the children came back for tea. Then he'd sent the children off to the pictures, placed the body of his wife across the handlebars of his bike, and wheeled her through the blacked-out streets of Luton to the river. There, he threw her in. No one saw him on the way. Next day, he burned his wife's blood-stained clothes in the copper, along with her false teeth. The coat, which had been dyed black for her brother-in-law's funeral, he hadn't burned because it wasn't blood-stained. But he got rid of it because it would have seemed strange had she left home in November without an overcoat. The first court hearing was in late March. The trial followed in late May. The defence argued for a verdict of manslaughter on the grounds that Irene Manton was killed by a sudden blow delivered in temper. But Keith Simpson's evidence was quite decisive. Not only had she been struck several times, but an attempt had also been made to strangle her. Bertie Manton was found guilty of murder and sentenced to death. There was an appeal which failed. But a petition got up by his children, by members of the fire service, and by a doctor for whom he worked part-time, achieved over 26,000 signatures, and he was reprieved by the King. He died in Parkhurst 3 years later, aged 43, of cancer.
In Sheer Plod, Chief Inspector Chapman was played by Norman Jones and Bertie Manton by Ronald Herdman. Other parts were played by Timothy Carlton, Terence Edmund, Alan Barker, Brett Usher, Andrew Wincott, Mark Straker, Tara Dominic, and Petra Markham. Murder Most Foul is written by John Scottney and presented by Nick Ross. The producer was Tim Souter.